Oh, we're back.
Scott again with Kathleen on 102.9 FM. We are sharing our burden live today. And the burden is Sean's passing. Sean's passing 6 years ago, as a matter of fact. Well, it'd be 6 years ago.
In June?
June the 8th, whereas Sean was born today in 1977. It's starting to sound like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Even Sean would be 41 today.
I know.
Imagine.
And, yeah.
You know, that makes me sound old, but I don't know how it happened, but Sean and I are the same age. It's amazing. anyway, time standing still. And that's the name of a book that Kathleen has taken part in and written a lovely chapter on her experience of losing a one and only son, you know, and that's, I've experienced the same loss, and we both know from different perspectives what that means, and that's kind of what we're talking about today. But I got to, diversify a little. I want to say for one thing, it's a wonderful day. It's a day when we, see the good side of what passing can mean, and we mean that. And we talked slightly about, you know, difficult situations when people suffer from whatever they suffer from. It doesn't matter, but when the result is a kind of a tormented life, it's great to have the faith and heart and belief that the essence of the person moves on and goes into a better realm and all these things and grows as we're talking. And this is, you know, where we're talking what we're thinking here, because this is sort of a newness to think of the evolving life of those who've passed on. That's a great theme, I think. I'm going to keep that one in my head for some time. But anyway, I believe it's a great day, and, you know, we can make it as happy or as sad as we want to. And, you know, we want a glimpse on the perfection of life that unfortunately considers the moving on from one phase to another, moving on to what I believe is the best phase, but leaving behind the hurting, tormented, grieving human beings who, sadly enough, can't stop feeling sorry for themselves until they learn that if they don't, they're always going to be there. And, you know, if we want to make a dent in this place down here, we've got to get past it and use it. And I mean that in the real sense of the word. And we both have. I mean, this program is a result of the legacy to Sean. There would be no sharing the burden if there was never a Sean. So, you know, when people talk to me or try and bestow accolades or something on me, I say, well, you know what, I'm not the architect of this thing. I'm carrying the message, but he did the real work, and you know, and he got a holiday. I'm still here doing this stuff, you know, and I love it. And Kathleen has gone on to help people with the grieving process and taken part in what I believe is an important book, especially for those in grieving, and it's called Life Came to a Standstill. And what do we have underneath there? I don't even think I've ever read it. Aside from true accounts of loss, love, and hope, and the author is Gwendolyn Broadmore, and obviously she has some under authors, if you will, six or seven or eight, is it?
Yes, seven.
I'm not
yeah.
sure. But and each has a specific and wonderful story of their journey, and I think it's it really is a must read if you, especially if you see loss not only of your own but in those around you, to maybe understand a little better what it means to lose, and more importantly to move past a loss and become not only productive but productive with an addition that you hope no one else has to experience, but that is very, very important in sharing and moving beyond the burden. So we'll leave that alone, Kathleen, for
Thanks.
A minute. And as you said, it's a day that, you know, rather than being sad, you respect the day so much because it's a son you love so much and still love. And that's the other part of this. It's a journey. It's not an end, you know. So whatever we had, we can not only have, we can reinforce, we can strengthen. And I believe we can use it to strengthen ourselves and, as I said, add something to ourselves, a dimension that we don't want anyone else to have, but one that in essence, at least from my side, that I'm thankful for, because I see what goodness it does in so many other lives, to be able to bring it up, talk about it, and to be seen productive in one area of life. In my case, not money anymore, but it's working the charity and introducing the concepts of hope and getting past things. And as you know, my life is all around addiction. Even though I'm not an addict, I've been so influenced all my life by different addicts in my life of different sorts, and compulsive people and extreme people. They all seem to fall into the same category, and I'm one of them. You know, I mean, I just don't have that genetic flaw or that piece of genetics that have forced me, at least so far in my life, to cross a line to have something take full control of me where I don't have anything to say about whether I do that thing or substance or habit or behavior or not. So, all that being said, we do a recovery program. Today's reading in the Life Recovery Devotional is called Restoring Relationships, and that brings up some thoughts around this, the loss of our son Sean, and relationships are badly wounded when people are lost, and I've not thought of it that way either until now. And badly wounded in that Kathleen mentions actually in the book about, you know, feeling some sort of regrets over the people who come and offer their sincere, heartfelt senses and so on, and I think today we know that those are soothing and helpful and healing components that we may just not have been ready to receive when they were offered. But as Kathleen said, something along the lines, and I'll let her explain it, but that she does regret not allowing some of that to happen. So maybe you want to talk a little bit to that.
Yeah, and you're right. There's a big shift in relationships when you lose a loved ones. I'm going to talk about my reluctance to accept help after. But first, I think we need to understand that many people are not comfortable offering you sympathies, especially when you've lost a child. They just don't know what to say. And it's awkward for them, so they tend to stay away when at that time you need the most support ever in your life. And those, the people that you think are going to come through for you, for example, your close family, your friends, often don't. That's not the people who actually come through for you. What you find is it's the people who have been through it that come through for you, are complete strangers. Like in the book, I write about this woman. Have I mentioned this on the show before about Lorraine, not even a colleague. I hope I'm not duplicating information. But this woman worked in the same organization as I worked in, far in the organization. I barely had any contacts with her. I knew her because she worked with our daughter, Kelly. And she started to send me emails after Sean died, random emails initially. And it was like, I hope you're having a good day today. I hope that you're dealing with your loss. And if you need help, please let me know. I'm here for you. And this from almost a complete stranger. And as time went on, I was able, like I would go into work and I would just get at my computer and I would say, this is a really bad day, Lorraine. And then she would start to write back. And she would write back almost instantaneously or within like hours. I would get a message back that was full of hope and about, you know, Sean's soul having transit. And she's a firm believer in afterlife. So she would basically reinforce what I believed in and make me feel generally just better. So that was one experience I had with people that, and my group of friends actually did a shift. Those that I was rather close to were no longer close to me. And friends that I used to not see so often became very close to me. So I had kind of a change over of friends. Now, to get to the issue of help, when Sean died, my family wanted to surround me, and my friends wanted to surround me, and I pushed them away. I don't know what it was for me. I think I wasn't, for one thing, I tend to like to be viewed as level-headed and in control, and that's been part of my career, and therefore I basically translated that demeanor into my personal life. And so people had never seen me at my most vulnerable, and I didn't want them to see me in that state. It embarrassed me, frankly. It's so odd to say that. Like, today I think about that, and I think, how could you think that pain and mourning and the grief you were experiencing was an embarrassment? But I was in such a bad state. I was so... I can't even explain it. I don't know if you went through the same, Scott, because we weren't together then, but I cried from morning to night and without stop, from morning to night, literally, and sobbing and real crying, like the, when you really, really cry. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't want anyone to see me like that, because I thought, even if they come to see me, I can't even speak with them because I can't speak. All I can do is cry. So it took me literally a good 3 weeks before I stopped really crying. And by then, I was hoping that they would now start to approach me, but they didn't. No, because they had been pushed away. And you know what? I understand that. You know, you're going to offer to be, you know, to come to see me, and, you know, you want to bring food, you want to be with me, you want to comfort me, and I'm going, no, you know what? I want to be alone. That's not how I said it, but that was basically my message. And now 3 weeks later, when I, on my own time now, want my friends back, well, it didn't quite work out like that. They had been burnt, and they figure, okay, you know what? She needs to be alone. We're going to give her her space. And unfortunately, that space never reduced itself. It stayed at a space. You know, so... Yeah. So those things happen, and I really regret that, and I encourage anyone listening to this, if you have a real significant loss that you need help from your family or your friends, embrace it, because I think if you don't, you're going to look back like I do years later. Well, when I wrote the book, I was already regretting it, and that was like a year or so later, I was already thinking, that was such a mistake, you know.
Well, you know what, though? I hear all that, and I believe every word of it. But that whole forgiving process, like, you know, you got to forgive yourself, too, beyond all these things. And believe me, those people understand. They wish on the other side they'd never pushed themselves into a spot that they later felt maybe they shouldn't have. And most people in your favor who come around people either dying or those who are left behind when somebody has just died, invariably say the wrong things.
Yes.
So, I mean,
yes.
The last thing is I think we want, and innately we protect ourselves, is not only from, you know, from someone saying the wrong thing, but from having a controlling person, like one of the people you described, I knew immediately that's, she's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, if you come to me and try and control me as well as, you know, especially at a time like that, you know, you're gonna be pushing me when I can't be pushed. I just can't take it. And, just because you for some reason truly believe that you have what I need, well, you don't know that. You're not God. You're never gonna be God. And, you know, if anything is important, I think in those times is, a pure, silent sounding board. And if you can't be that, you probably should not be around people offering unsolicited advice, because it's too painful. And as much as some of it did come in and you're glad it happened, a lot of that is bad. You know, it's just dangerous, evil stuff, controlling people are controlling people. And until they go out and read up on codependency and other literature along those lines, they never learn that most of the things they're doing are really damaging and wounding people. So I'm really adverse to
Yeah, but I wouldn't say they were pushy, these people. I think people say the wrong things at those moments because they feel awkward. And frankly, our society, our Western society, has not been developed and formed and in a mindset to accept that death is part of life. We're not there yet. If you look at other cultures, they're there. They talk about death with their children. Death is part of their life experience, and when someone dies, they don't exclude children from the death. It's all an inclusive life experience. As Westerners, we never talk about that. It's not even mentioned in schools, basically. You know, someone dies in school and there's this now they're doing better in school. They will have some counselors and all that if it's, close to the school. But generally, it's not part of the education. It's like parenting. They don't seem to teach that. And I think it would be very valuable to start talking about that in an open and transparent way, that it is part of your life experience and you're going to experience it. And here's what's going to happen when someone close to you dies. Here are the feelings you're going to experience. So that way, when people sustain a significant loss, the people have been trained to come around and to know what to say and what not to say, and not to try and control how you're feeling.
Yeah.
But I never saw it like that. The people that did kind of push themselves in and wanted to be part of what I was going through, I never saw it as them trying to control what I was feeling. It was mostly, I want to help you, and I don't want you to suffer like this anymore because I love you too much to see you in that state. That's what I felt was going on, and I loved them for that.
That's great. Yeah, we have different receivers. That's the only problem. And that's true. It's what it is. It's, if you get that out of it, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, because that's probably what it is. But me, when I hear anybody, using words like should or different things
like
that.
Well, those are trigger points, though, for you. You don't like those words.
No, I don't. In the programs, I don't like them.
They don't.
Just that simple word really means, I know something
that you don't.
You don't know. And I'm smarter than you are because I know that's a better thing to use than the thing you use.
Yes.
So I must have a better education or took it on. Forever, but generally speaking, it's like unsolicited information.
But if you look at it, it's only coming from the goodness of their heart. And yes, they're using words they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to take the eraser and erase all those words that are like your personal trigger, my personal trigger isn't go. At the end of the day, the message they're giving me is, I love you and I don't want you to suffer like this.
Yeah.
I need to help you. Even if you're not willing to accept my help, I'm going to help you.
My message back is, I love you, but I have to hit you. anyway, a little bit of levity on this day. Well, listen, just thinking of different journeys, and we're going to take another break here. And I believe we're going to play almost a theme song for me, which is, or some of it anyway, and it's Gary Wright's Dreamweaver. And I'm pretty sure because we've got a new system here that tells me some things if I want to look at it. And I know our buddy Jay is going to announce it. But it is something close to my heart, and it's because you told me that Kathleen, that is ex-wife, just said that this was something that was close to Sean's heart, and it made me understand from someone so involved in addictions and people affected by addictions and that kind of thing that it just struck home, especially the words, I think you can get me through the night, and things like that. I thought, wow, so why don't we do that, Jay, and You can announce it better than I can. That's your deal.
Thank you very much, Scott. Yeah, it's time to play Sean's theme song. Here's Gary Wright and Dreamweaver, and we'll be back here on Sharing the Burden.
I've just closed my eyes again, climbed aboard the Dreamweaver.